Ave, and welcome to Emperors of Rome, a Roman history podcast from La Trobe University. I'm your host, Matt Smith, and with me today is Dr. Rhiannon Evans, Senior Lecturer in Classics and Ancient History at La Trobe University. This is episode CXVIII, The Roman Calendar. It's hard to imagine life without a calendar, but just think about it for a moment. How would I work out when to get my scarves out of storage? How would I know that I'm another year older? How would I know that I'm exactly 9 days away from scheduled leave? Luckily, Julius Caesar solved this problem. Hail Caesar! Although, it took a bit of trouble getting it to that point. Here's Rhiannon Evans.
The Roman calendar is important to us because often Roman texts will talk about when an event happened, both in terms of the month it happened and the year. And so we need to understand what that means. So by and large, the months are very similar to ours. We've taken them from then. But their system of counting years was quite different. Obviously, they couldn't use BCE and CE because for a lot of Roman history, it hadn't happened yet, the event that that's based on. So it's important to us for understanding how the Romans constructed time, where they constructed it from, what were the important events for them.
So what do we know about the origins of the Roman calendar then? Because this is an important step in the development of how we try and keep track of the passage of years and months and seasons and those kind of aspects. And I imagine that the reason that they came up with this had something to do with crop rotations.
Yeah, the Romans themselves often talk about other peoples and how they count time and, you know, whether it's just by where the sun is. And
yeah.
I think you could say they regard it as an important part of civilization that you've moved on to having a formal calendar. And undoubtedly, it was related to agriculture. That makes sense early on. But like a lot of early Roman history, it's buried in mythology. It's kind of their legendary history. It was founded by the founder of their city, Romulus.
Romulus,
he founded
yes.
the first calendar at the same time. It's a little bit surprising to me in some ways because Romulus is often given the war role and the second king of Rome, Numa Pompilius, is given the more civic, you know, he sort of established priesthoods and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
If I'd had to guess, I would have said they'd have given it to him. They clearly think it's so important.
And I was about to say it's so important that you give it to the first king of Rome.
But maybe also that means that for the Romans is also related to military activity because Romulus is so strongly associated with foundations and wall building, partly because of that association with defending the city.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he kills his brother to defend the city. And when you can go to war, the Romans tend not to fight in winter if they can help it.
Yep.
So the calendar is important for that as well. It's not just an agricultural necessity. Now, it has to be said our evidence for this, like a lot of our evidence for the calendar, comes from Macrobius, from his work called the Saturnalia, which is 4th century CE. It's quite late, which doesn't mean it's unreliable and is clearly picking up on earlier strands that we just don't have, earlier texts, earlier evidence. But we don't have very early narrative. We don't have very early evidence for Romulus, if he existed, having done that. What this means, of course, is that the Romans couldn't put a precise time on it. As far as they knew, by the time they started recording it, a form of their calendar had always existed.
Yeah.
So it goes back a long way. And we have this evidence, for example, in Ovid's poem, The Fasti, which is actually a really important poem for us in looking at the calendar, because Fasti means calendar. And in book one, very near the beginning of the book, line 27 onwards, he talks about how Romulus is the founder of the calendar, which is the basis of his poem. He says, when Rome's founder, that is Romulus, established the calendar, he determined there'd be 10 months in every year. You knew more about swords than stars, Romulus, surely. Since conquering neighbors was your chief concern. Yet there's a logic that might have possessed him, Caesar, and that might well justify his error. He held that the time it takes for a mother's womb to produce a child was sufficient for his year.
Ah.
This sounds very dodgy to me.
Yeah, but
I don't know whether you're meant to think it sounds dodgy or
it's an interesting rationale.
For as many months also after her husband's funeral, a widow maintained signs of mourning in her house. So Quirinus, which is another name for Romulus, in his ceremonial robes had that in view when he decreed his year to an unsophisticated people. You can see how the proper use of the calendar is related to a more civilized culture in the Roman mindset.
Mm. And in those early days, how is the calendar working? Was it substantially different to ours? Did it have common elements?
the Roman calendar looks very familiar to us in terms of the names of the months, because we in English and generally in the Western calendar have taken the names of the months from the Roman calendar.
So they're still with us as they are.
They are. But what is different is that the early calendar only has 10 named months. Now, this is kind of the crux of the big problem. How come it only had 10 months and later on developed 12, the 12 we're familiar with?
Because the months had vaguely the same duration of our month. So you'd have all these leftover days.
Yeah. At most times, as far as we can see, they have around 30 days. And there are little variations on that. But if I... Shall I read out the list of the names?
Yeah.
But if I read out the 10 months... Even if I read them out as we think Latin was pronounced, I think you'll find them familiar. Mm. So there's Januarius, that Y at the beginning becomes the J.
Yes.
Februarius, Martius, Aprilis, Maius, Junius, Quintilis, Sextilis, September, October, November, December. Mm. Those are exactly the same.
Same names. We've kept those intact.
Yeah. But to pronounce them properly in Latin, actually should have said November and December.
Sure. And the orphaned 60-odd days that aren't accounted for in those 10 months?
Well, various theories about that. Could the months have been longer? Is this somehow related to some kind of lunar calendar?
Mm.
But that doesn't really answer the question. One theory is that there was a sort of long, unaccounted for winter month that wasn't named.
Yeah. Were they counting the days like we did? So if you've got a 30-day month, were they saying today's the 18th, today's the 27th? They weren't doing things like that?
No, it's nothing like as easy as that. They have fixed points in each month, three fixed points. Right, the first day of the month is called the calends.
Mm.
The nones is sometimes the seventh day of the month and sometimes the fifth day of the month. In Latin, that's noni, but that's a plural, so we call it nones. And the ides, or idus, is the 15th day of the month and sometimes the 13th day of the month. Now, why do you even have fixed days that aren't fixed? It's because the months themselves are different lengths. All right, so longer months, the ides is the 15th day of longer months, 31 days, because ides means the same. It's got 15 days either side of it.
Now, I'm seeing the problem with this. It's unnecessarily confusing.
It only gets more confusing, I'm sorry to say.
Yeah, good.
The nones is fixed because it is 9 days before the ides or the ides.
Mm-hmm.
If you did the calculation for yourself, you'd see that 15 minus 7 is actually 8. But because of Roman inclusive counting, it's 9 days before. Confused yet?
Yeah.
Now, they only have those three fixed days. So every other day they have to talk about in relation to one of those days.
Mm.
And they talk about days being before one of these days. All right, so here's a famous date, the Ides of March.
Yes.
That you know that's the 15th of March, because March is one of the longer months.
Mm.
If you want to say the 14th of March, you say the day before the Ides of March, pre-die, the pre-day. And you continue counting backwards. All right, so the day before the Ides of March, the 13th, they call it the third day before because they count inclusively. For example, the 27th of February is the third day before the 1st of March.
Yeah.
Right. It's actually 2 days before for us in a year where we don't have the 29th of February. But because of inclusive counting, it's the third day before. So in Latin, you say ante diem tertium. Tertium means the third. Before the third day, calendas martias, of the calends of March.
Yeah, I would just be completely lost, I think, in ancient Rome. I'd need a paper and pen to work out the date all the time. And even then, I wouldn't know how to take my VIIs away from my IXs, and it'd just be a mess.
It is hard. And I have a lot of fun with some of my first year students where they have to work out their birthdays.
Yeah, fun. Fun for who? Fun for who?
So usually the month would have 30 or 31 days. And it led the Romans into a bit of a problem, because if we read Macrobius, that 4th century Roman source, the 10-month year was 304 days long.
Mm.
And he says, very early on, so hard to find this evidence at all, in fact, with the second king of Rome, Numa, increased this to 355 days. already increased it to 12 lunar months, that he was the one who actually added in Januarius and Februarius.
Okay, so you've still got unaccounted for days there.
Well, 355 got the Romans into trouble because their year went out of whack and they had to keep adding an intercalculary month. Now, Macrobius is trying to address a problem where we do have to go back to the meanings of the names of those months, in that the last 6 months of the year, that is Quintilis, Sextilis, September, etc., their adjectival names mean the 5th, the 6th, the 7th, the 8th, the 9th, the 10th.
Yes. Yep.
Even though for us, September, October, November, December are not the 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th month.
Yeah.
And eventually they weren't for the Romans as well. They were the 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th. So he's trying to address that issue of why have we got this skewed system where a word that means 7th is actually the name of our 9th month. And what he's basically saying is originally the year started with March. March was the first month, or Martius, the month of Mars.
Yeah.
After all, he's the father of Romulus, the founder of Rome. Makes sense that they'd give him the first month. But because the year wasn't long enough, Numa had to add in 2 months, and he added in Januarius and Februarius. But even with that, they end up with 355 days, and that is not enough for the 365 and a little bit year.
Yeah, yeah.
So their calendar goes very, very wrong, and it's not put right, or at least relatively right, until the time of Julius Caesar, so until the 40s BCE. About hundreds of years of this calendar going wrong, and they have to insert extra days to bring it back to normal every now and again.
Yeah, because you'd be getting to the point where, sure, it's just 5 days, but by the next year, it'll be 10 days and then 15. Mm. And then suddenly you're celebrating Saturnalia in February and you're there going, well, this is all just weird. What's going on here?
Well, prior to the Julian calendar,
yeah,
they seem to have had this 355 days.
Well, can you imagine Christmas during summer? I mean, this sort of thing. Sorry, I'm just completely ignoring what you're saying here.
It still seems weird to me living in this country having Christmas in the summer, believe me. They alternated the 355 with either 377 or 378. So you insert an extra 27 or 28 days, which is what they call the mensis intercalaris, the intercalendar month.
Okay. The what's left over.
Yeah. It's like the Romans created a problematic calendar and their solution to it was even
to
more
double
complicated.
Down.
Yeah. Not to just put it. And clearly it became annoying to them. And Macrobius tells us that it sometimes happened. This is a direct quote from book one of the Saturnalia, chapter 12. Sometimes happened that the cold weather appeared in the summer months and conversely the hot weather in the winter months. Mm. So that's a whole 6 months out of whack.
That's just living in Australia all over.
When this happened, as many days were allowed to be spent without the name of a month as would bring the time of the year to where the appearance of the sky would be found suitable to the present month. So they just had to allow a whole load of days with no name, the intercalary month in effect, to exist so that they could get back to the correct month at the correct time of year. So it's kind of about ordering time. It only matters if you need to have this regulated idea of the year. And sure, it helps with telling people when they need to harvest the crops and that kind of thing. But that only matters if you're going to have some kind of oversight, because the farmer knows when the crops are ready, go and do it. They don't really need a name for the year.
Yeah.
But of course, if you've got an empire and you need to administer it, then you need some form of organization. So this is kind of about organization as much as anything else. And it's letting them down badly.
So by the time it gets to the rule of the dictator Julius Caesar, he comes up with a solution, and we credit to him, but you know, he had some very smart men working for
him. He would have had astronomers and scientists helping him with this. He's very good at getting all the best people around him.
Mm.
But you know, only someone like Caesar, who's taking control of the state,
somebody's got to sign the check.
Yeah, so, and somebody's got to say it's going to happen, and we're not going to have a discussion about it, which is what a dictator can do. And he decides that this has to happen in 46 BCE.
Mm-hmm.
What he does is would seem quite disorienting to us, except the calendar was already disorienting. He had to make the year 46 extra long to soak those days up. So it was 445 days long.
The year 46 was that long.
I don't know of any conspiracy theories that would have been going around at the time about this, but I imagine there must have been.
Yeah.
And I base this on what apparently happened when the Gregorian calendar came in Europe. 10 days were taken away, I think. People thought they'd lost 10 days of their life.
Right.
Did people think they were having their lives extended or there was some kind of weird conspiracy going on? I don't know.
And what happens to your birthday if you were born in like the extra...
You go straight for the important matter.
Yeah, yeah. But that was just for one extra long year.
It was. From that point, we can sort of align the year with the sun, having 365 1/4 days a year, and do that in the way that we do it by having a leap year every 4 years.
So that came in at that point.
That came in at that point. Now, it didn't work out perfectly, but it's pretty damn good compared to what they had previously.
That's really impressive, though, 2,000 years ago, that they can look at how the sun's moving and how the earth moves around the sun and everything to that degree where they go, right, we need 365 1/4 days.
It is impressive, but, you know, they had people whose jobs it was to look at the stars, and they are people who really map out what is going on in the heavens and where we are in relation to the sun at certain times. And so they can do those calculations. It's not just the Romans and Greeks. The Babylonians were renowned back then for having a really good sense of astronomy and how the earth is relating to what's going on in the sky.
Yeah.
So not that surprising that they can do it. As I say, I think it just took the political will.
Yeah.
And we do know that some people were abusing the kind of shortfall in the calendar politically by having their term of office extended by starting their office early or leaving it late. So you could get a longer year of power.
Yeah, yeah. What changes did Caesar's calendar bring in then from the old Roman calendar?
Well, it's much more consistent. It works every year, pretty much.
Yeah.
It's not going to be very different. And he also gets a significant honor from this in that one of the months is now named after him. So this is another change we see. And that's why when I read out the names of the Roman months, the original ones, the month Quintilis doesn't sound very familiar to us as most of the others did. And that's because that's renamed Julius and that yut sound becomes j, so it's July. And he's the first historical person we know of to have a month named after him. So January is named after the god Janus, the god of doorways. Makes sense. Beginning
okay,
of the year.
Yeah, yep.
Februarius. Some people think it's named after the word in Latin that means fever.
Okay.
So it's the month of fevers because it's cold in Europe. March or Martius, named after Mars. April is a bit difficult. April might be to do with the Latin verb aperio, which is an opening up because that's spring. Maius, some people say, is named after the goddess Maia. Not that prominent in the Roman pantheon, to be honest. She's the mother of Mercury. Junius may be named after Juno, so June. So some of them are easier than others.
Yeah.
But none of them is a historical personage. They're all mythological.
Yes.
And then some of them are so lost in the mists of time that we don't know. Like February, the Romans didn't really know. They had educated guesses. But July, Julius.
July, Julius.
Julius.
Yeah.
That's pretty clear and everyone knows exactly who
he
refers to.
He earned it. He earned it.
Glad you think so.
Okay, and the duration of the months pretty much kept the same, better timings for everything now.
They settle down into around 30 days. And again, they're not all exactly the same length, but they're pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
But the more important change is that the year now will have a consistent, you know that in January it is cold and it is winter.
Okay.
And festivals are at the right time. We haven't really mentioned that. For example, the historian Livy tells us that there were problems with when you held festivals before Julius Caesar put it right. Livy also notes that there are eclipses that happen at a specific time, but he has to give us a modern date for that. In Book 37, Livy says, on those days in which the consul set out for war during the games of Apollo, 5 days before the Ides of Quintilis, in a clear sky in the daytime, the light was obscured when the moon went under the circle of the sun. But we know that the day that Livy is giving for that is wrong or doesn't work.
Because we can work out when solar eclipses were.
Yeah, exactly. So 5 days before the Ides of Quintilis is the 11th of July. But in 190 BC, the solar eclipse was actually on the 14th of March.
Okay. That four-month inaccuracy is caused by the drift.
Exactly.
So we're seeing it in action there. Ah, very good. So when historians talk about dates now, So we say this calendar came in 46 BCE. Is that our date or their date? Are we adjusting all the dates now, historically, that we use from back then? Does that make sense?
If it's pre-46 BCE.
Yeah, yeah.
We are adjusting it usually. We're giving it the right time of year to make sense for us. We're not talking about quintilis or sextilis. We're using the names of the months that actually came into effect after Julius Caesar. Spoiler alert, the month Sextilis, which is the eighth month, was renamed by or under the reign of Augustus to August. We talk about in August, I don't know, 43 BCE, even though in 43 BCE it wasn't called August.
Yeah, okay.
But that's because we're sort of giving it the English interpretation, I suppose. We're using terminology familiar to us.
Yeah, yeah.
Not their precise calendar. And of course, their precise calendar was so imprecise in itself that I think it would only lead to more confusion.
So at what point did we get August?
Well, because Caesar had had the seventh month named after him,
yeah,
clearly this was a good idea for future rulers and in some cases successful, some not. But for Augustus, he gets August named after himself. It's a month that's important to him, a month of some of his greatest victories apart from anything else.
So it gets changed from...
It gets named from Sextilis.
Sextilis.
Sixth, although it's the eighth month.
Yes.
To Augustus or August.
Yeah.
So it's the Augustan month. It's just July and August to us now. It sounds natural, but actually naming a 12th of the year after a person, it's a pretty big deal.
I'm surprised that it didn't catch on.
Well, others tried it, but Augustus is the last one to do it successfully in a way that lasts.
Yeah.
And this is partly because those that try it afterwards, their reign ends very badly for them. So Nero attempts to change the name of April to Neronius, named after himself. That didn't work. Obviously, we're still calling it April. And the boldest move at all comes much later in the late second century with our old friend Commodus, who tries to rename every month to be named after some word associated with him. He's taken on this whole list of honorific names, and he wants to name every month after one of these, wiping out July and August, Julius and Augustus.
No wonder it didn't catch on, really.
You want me to read the list?
Read out the list.
According to our very, very hostile sources, he renamed the months Amazonius, Invictus, which means undefeated, Felix, which means blessed, Pius, which means reverent, Lucius, which was one of his actual names, Aelius, another of his actual names, and kind of goes to his real names from here, Aurelius, he's the son of Marcus Aurelius, Commodus, Augustus, which by now has become...
part of his name anyway.
Yeah, part of every emperor's name, Herculeus, Romanus, Roman, and the best one of all, Exuperatorius.
Right.
Which is above everything. Commodus was murdered, and all of that went the way of an emperor who's murdered. They're not going to hold on to these.
But for a few years, that would have been very confusing when you're using those months, because I take it Rome just had to go, yes, sure thing, Commodus, we are now calling it these.
You wouldn't dare go against him.
I mean, that didn't last long after Commodus, I'm sure, and the calendar reverted to what it was before, August and July intact. And the calendar more or less continues, probably needing a few adjustments here and there up until the time of the introduction of the Gregorian calendar. And now we're talking 1582, so 1600
years.
1600 years. Catholic Church has finally gone, well, we need to know when we're saying Mass. We need to know when Easter is. I think it was the
catalyst. Easter's the one you want to fix, even though Easter isn't fixed. But you need to know when to fix it each year. And you need to be working from a consistent calendar.
Yeah.
Which they had got a pretty good consistent calendar, but it was slightly out. And the reason is that they had too many leap years that had been added along the way. So that, you know, we said that the year is 365 and a quarter days long. Mm-hmm. So every 4 years you need an extra day, which we have as February 29th. Because they'd been adding them consistently every 4 years, they'd got ahead a little bit.
Okay, okay.
Right, they'd added too many days, too many leap years. And so the problem's been accumulating and they needed to get rid of some days. They adjusted the calendar to the Gregorian calendar, which we still use here, although not everybody has adopted it consistently. So I believe the reason that the Orthodox Easter is different to the Catholic Church's Easter is to do with not adopting the Gregorian calendar. You know, Britain didn't adopt it in the 1500s. Yeah. It was quite a lot later. And the most recent big adoption of this calendar is that Turkey adopted it in 1917, towards the end of the First World War.
When the Ottoman Empire ended.
When the Ottoman Empire came to an end, yeah. So it goes alongside that.
Yeah.
It's a kind of part of modernization as they saw it.
So technically, we're still kind of using the Roman calendar. You can call it that.
Yeah, yeah. I would see it like that.
Yeah.
But then I would.
You would. It might be worth as a coda just to tell us, where did BC AD come from, which we're now using CE and BCE? It's all in relation to what was decided as being the birth of Christ.
Yeah. So for us, it's now 2019.
Yeah.
I mean, there are different calendars still in use around the world, but this is the one we use. And it didn't happen straight after Christ's life. Christianity didn't have enough importance at that point to impose a calendrical system, I guess.
So when Jesus was born, they didn't suddenly go, hey, everyone, year one, we're now calling this one.
No, in fact, it doesn't happen until around 800. Until that point, you know, there were various ways, for example, that the Romans referred to their years as the consular years when they still had consuls, or from the foundation of the city. So counting that as year one, that's their year one, 753. But around 800 AD or CE, as we're calling it, the decision was made to sort of start time with the birth of Christ.
Yeah.
That's sort of become natural to us, but it's sort of handy to know that it has an origin point. It's not just natural. It's not just always there. It was decided to be an event of such importance that time should start from then. And of course, you've still got all of this history written down by the Greeks and Romans in particular, which occurred before then. So you need a way of referring to that. So you have to say BC, before Christ. And the AD comes from Anno Domini, which means in the year of the Lord.
Mm. Even then, you get the problem of they fixed year zero, which there wasn't. There wasn't a year zero. It went from 1 BC to 1 AD. But even then, they fixed the year zero wrong. There's like a four-year drift. They miscounted.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think something interesting about talking about the calendar at all is to remind ourselves that it's a construct. It's something we've invented.
Mm.
It's a way that's handy for us to deal with dividing up time. But apart from the fact that the Earth takes a certain number of time to go around the sun, there is nothing natural about it. There's nothing natural about when you start from. That's a decision you make, and other cultures make the decision to start in other places.
Mm. CE and BCE are now before Common Era and Common Era.
That's right, yes.
And why has that been adopted?
It's been adopted as a way of not linking the dates so directly to Christianity, I guess, because it's used by cultures outside of the Christian world now. I do use those terms, but at the same time, I know that we're still using that numbering system. So we're still using a numbering system that it is related to Christ. In a way, I think people can choose either. They need to be consistent about it. This is what I say to my students when they write essays. If they want to use BC and AD, that's fine. Just don't mix the others in with them. And whichever you use, be aware that the numbers themselves are the same. And we've kind of got to the point where, unless a dictator comes along and declares this is year one, these are the numbers we've been using for so long, and we've kind of dominated a lot of the world with them, that it would be confusing for us to start again. And where would we start anyway?
Yeah.
Wherever you start, you're making a statement about it, aren't you?
That's Dr. Rhiannon Evans, Senior Lecturer in Classics and Ancient History at La Trobe University, and you have been listening to Emperors of Rome. If you like this podcast, you can subscribe in Apple Podcasts or your local friendly neighbourhood podcatching service. Reviews, as always, very much appreciated. You can like the Emperors of Rome on Facebook, and you can follow both myself and Rhiannon on Twitter. Rhiannon is at Dr. Rhiannon Evans, I am at Nightlight Guy, and the podcast is at Rome Podcast. As I flagged at the top, I'm taking some leave, so we'll be skipping the next episode, but we'll be back soon. So until then, I'm Matt Smith, you've been fantastic, and thanks for listening.